Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Impoga.
Particularly the United Nations Security Council, they are the ones who should be getting more and more engaged in a mediation process. And one does not see that happening. One does not see that full engagement to bring the hostilities to an end.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa calls on all parties in the Russia and Ukraine war to lay down arms and accept mediation.
Recent research has revealed long-term exposure to noise pollution causes mental and physical health problems in humans across all age groups. It is a major and growing environmental issue that requires the attention of policymakers in multiple sectors of society.
Hundreds of delegates to gather in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, for the fifth session of the UN Environmental Assembly.
There is a commitment by IGAD with its member states to continue this training. As you know, we are host to over 4.4 million refugees in IGAD region, and these refugees reside in host communities, and therefore we have millions of teachers to train.
And in East Africa, an influential regional trade bloc embarks on an ambitious program to help refugees and communities hosting them. Those stories and more coming up right here on Nightline Africa. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa has called on all parties in the Russia-Ukraine war to lay down arms and accept mediation. Ramaphosa also urged the United Nations to do more to foster negotiations. His sentiments have been echoed by many South Africans who worry that the economic and social impact of the war will soon hit Africa. Thuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
Addressing an intergovernmental national litigation forum in Pretoria today, President Ramaphosa said the conflict should be subjected to mediation, negotiation, and engagement. He described the war as unnecessary, saying it is causing death and destruction. He also expressed unhappiness with those expected to bring the warring parties to the negotiation table.
Particularly the United Nations Security Council, they are the ones who should be getting more and more engaged in a mediation process, and one does not see that happening. One does not see that full engagement to bring the hostilities to an end.
Agreement came from many South Africans across divides. Innocent Gadimeng is a third-year communications and media studies student at the University of Johannesburg. The 24-year-old told VOA how worried he is about Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
The dependent countries to those countries will suffer as a result. The world right now, especially with COVID and everything, cannot afford such a huge thing happening here.
His views are shared by Docs Diesel, an entrepreneur and artist based in Johannesburg. He said he fears South Africa could soon start feeling the pinch of the rising oil prices.
I'm worried. We're going to suffer.
The more there's becoming problems with the oil, the prices go up. The more the gases go up, the more people have to pay more. The more money, the more the economy goes down.
And Sipamandla Zondi, an international relations expert at the University of Johannesburg, said South Africa is correct in calling for a peaceful resolution to the Russia-Ukraine war.
I think South Africa's position has been very strong. It's the position of the majority of countries in the world. It says what they need to do is to sit down both sides and come to an amicable position.
Ramaphosa said when South Africans were faced with two choices, fighting or negotiating for freedom, it was the latter that brought permanent peace to the country. Thuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Meanwhile, political analysts in Zimbabwe say Russia's invasion of Ukraine may result in a severe shortage of wheat, as Ukraine is the main supplier of the grain to the southern African country. Experts say Russia's invasion will also likely lead to a jump in fuel prices on the African continent. Mlondolozi Ndlovu has more for VOA from Harare, Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwean political analysts say Russia's military invasion of Ukraine will negatively impact all sectors of the country's economy as the global geopolitical crisis deepens. Tafadzwa Musarara, president of the Grain Millers Association of Zimbabwe, says although Zimbabwe is a small country, it will not be spared from the ripple effects of the ongoing crisis.
Which of course has degenerated into war, will affect the global wheat supply position, largely on the following factors. One, Russia and Ukraine account for 35 to 40% of the world supply. In fact, Russia is in the top three. The war region, including Latvia, Belarus, and others, are also wheat producing countries. We have just been informed by our shipping companies that they no longer go to that region because their insurance companies, they've now declared it a war zone.
Zimbabwean analyst Pride Mkono says the country's food security has been largely dependent on grain from Ukraine.
And therefore, the crisis that is ongoing in Ukraine, which has seen the Russia invading Ukraine, mean that exports from the same are going to be largely truncated from the same country because there's minimal movement. And also, given the crisis that is likely to arise, there will be very little food for Ukraine itself to actually export, such that it is likely to consume its wheat domestically.
Russia's aggression in Ukraine is unlikely going to attract military intervention from NATO countries that have already slapped the superpower with economic sanctions. Prosper Chitambara, an economist with the Lubani State University, says if the Russian-Ukraine conflict is not resolved as soon as possible, the country's energy sector will likely experience severe shortages that will push prices higher and cause hyperinflation.
As you know, Russia is one of the biggest producers of energy, in particular oil and gas, as well as wheat. So the conflict we are seeing between Russia and Ukraine will have an impact on oil production, on the supply of oil on the global market, and obviously that will have an upward effect on the price of oil, which will adversely affect the globe, including obviously Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe, we import oil, we import petrol, we import diesel. So any increase in the price of fuel will obviously have a knock-on effect, a domino effect on pricing across all sectors of the economy.
African economic experts are urging the United Nations and the rest of the international community to apply additional financial and economic pressure on Russia to withdraw its forces from Ukraine. For VOA News in Harare, Zimbabwe, I am Mlondolozi Ndlovu.
A visiting delegation of senior U.S. officials has reiterated Washington's commitment to economic ties in Africa. From the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, Ruben Chama reports.
The latest visit by U.S. representatives is aimed at signaling the growing commercial ties between the United States and the African continent. Akuna Cook, Deputy Assistant Secretary of State, leads the iPower delegation on a two-week tour to Africa. She told journalists this week that President Joe Biden wants to expand economic engagement with Africa.
The Biden-Harris administration has made trade and investment with Africa a huge priority, and this trip is really allowing us to connect with entrepreneurs, investors, and policymakers to talk about how the U.S. government can improve its commercial and economic diplomacy initiatives.
During the tour, which began on February 14th, the U.S. delegation is visiting Nigeria, Kenya, South Africa, and Namibia. Speaking to reporters Tuesday in South Africa, the third stop on the trip, Cook gave more details about our mission to promote the U.S.-Africa trade and investment relationship.
In Nigeria and in here in South Africa, we are focusing on the creative industries, digital technologies, climate and health. In Kenya, we were particularly focused on digital technologies and talking to startup founders, investors, to understand how the U.S. government can better support those efforts. And then lastly, in Namibia, we'll be focused on climate technologies, given the potential of Namibia to really drive us into the future on that front.
Leslie Marbury, Acting Chief Operating Officer at Prosper Africa, a U.S.-led initiative to increase trade and investment between the United States and Africa, is among those on the delegation.
It's all about the opportunities that we are seeing in Africa and that we've certainly seen in Nigeria and Kenya and now in South Africa. We are doing four things with Prosper Africa. We're advancing deals, we're promoting opportunities, we're reducing barriers to trade and investment, and we're deepening financial and capital markets.
The U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, says since 2019, the U.S. government has supported African and U.S. businesses and investors in closing agreements on more than $2.8 billion in new exports and investments, and deals worth more than $10 billion are in the pipeline. Deputy Assistant Secretary Cook explains a key goal of the deals.
We do a lot of work with governments and the U.S. to ensure that there's a regulatory environment and an enabling environment that is transparent. Our companies are specifically focused on ensuring that there is job creation in terms of their investments, and that's something that the United States does extremely well, ensuring that the investments that are made, whether it be in infrastructure, whether it be in health or climate, comes with an investment in workers here in Africa.
She added that the United States, as a leading source of foreign direct investment into Africa, is stepping up efforts to reduce corruption by helping governments digitize their services. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
Hundreds of delegates from around the world will gather in the Kenyan capital next week to attend the resumed fifth session of the UN Environment Assembly. The assembly that brings together representatives of the 193 UN member states, businesses and civil society is the world's highest decision-making authority on the environment. Again from Nairobi, VOA's Ruben Chama reports.
The critical findings requiring greater attention are highlighted in the latest edition of the Frontiers Report, first published in 2016, with an alert to the growing risk of zoonotic diseases 4 years before the outbreak of the COVID-19 pandemic. Andrea Hinwood is the chief scientist at UN Environment Program, UNEP.
Our Frontiers Report series aims to put the spotlight on key and emerging environmental issues, those that potentially have huge effects on our society, economy, and ecosystems. So in this report, we're drawing attention to three issues of growing concern: noise in our cities, wildfires under climate change, and phenology shifting the rhythm of nature.
She said the issues highlight the urgent need to address the triple planetary crisis of climate change, pollution, and biodiversity loss. David De Silva is Canada's acting High Commissioner to Kenya.
Canada is well referenced in this new report, not only with examples of how climate change affects the monarch butterfly or the migration of whales, but also sadly regarding my hometown of Toronto, or wildfires that we in Canada are experiencing more and more. The implications of climate change and other threats to nature are already widely felt. 1 million species facing risk of extinction globally. In Canada, we have over 600 species that are formally listed as species at risk, many owing in part to risks from a changing climate.
The new report says each year between 2002 and 2016, an average of about 423 million hectares of the Earth's land surface, an area about the size of the entire European Union, burned, becoming more common in mixed forest and savanna ecosystems. An estimated 67% of the annual global area burned by all types of fires, including wildfires, was of the African continent. The report was released ahead of the UN Environment Assembly, UNEA, to be aired on February 28th through March 2nd. It also highlights the hidden cost of noise pollution as Martin Capel, head of thematic assessments unit at UNEP, explains.
Recent research has revealed long-term exposure to noise pollution causes mental and physical health problems in humans across all age groups. It is a major and growing environmental issue that requires the attention of policymakers in multiple sectors of society. To give you just one example, long-term exposure to noise in Europe, for instance, contributes to at least 12,000 premature deaths per year.
Capel says the report encourages urban planners to prioritize noise reduction by investing in urban infrastructure that creates positive soundscapes such as tree belts, green walls, and more green spaces in cities.
Now, in many big cities in the global north and south, people are exposed daily to high levels of noise. Some examples are Barcelona, Cairo, Hong Kong, New York, Toronto, Nairobi, Jakarta.
The UN Environment Assembly, UNEA, is the world's most powerful decision-making body on the environment and responsible for tackling some of the most critical issues of our time. Starting next Monday, hundreds of key decision makers, businesses, and representatives of intergovernmental organizations and civil society will gather in the Kenyan capital for the second part of UNEA 5. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
Fighting has largely died down in Ethiopia's Tigray region after more than a year of conflict between the federal government and the Tigrayan rebels. However, clashes continue in the neighboring Afar region, where civilians have formed self-defense militias to respond to Tigrayan rebel attacks. In the town of Semera, the main hospital is overwhelmed with the injured. Vinicius Assis reports from Semera.
Aisha Noor was making breakfast for her husband and eight children earlier this month when their home in Abala, a town in the Afar region, was hit by incoming fire. The explosives injured 10-year-old Noor Darsa's leg and burned the face of 9-year-old Tahir Darsa, who were sitting on the same bed as their mother in a small room full of others who were injured. Noor was able to get the wounded children to Semera's Dupti Hospital, but the family was separated. She said they are here to save their lives, but the situation for their family is dangerous. They don't know if the family members are alive or not. The hospital was forced to turn its library into a room for injured patients after an increase in fighting quickly put a strain on their capacity, as Dr. Hussein Aden explained.
We had patients who had penetrating abdominal injury and some patients who had a brain injury, a traumatic brain injury because of the bullet, whether it's bullet or whether it's an explosion. And also we've seen kids who sustained burn traumas and who had also amputations, both leg and arm amputations because of the explosion.
72-year-old Fatuma Ibrahim has fractures in both arms and a leg.
They were fleeing the scene while they were fleeing the accident, the war. There was a car accident, so around six people died, and those who were fortunate enough to survive, they brought them to the hospital.
But with patients, even in the hospital corridors, it's clear that conditions in the medical facility are poor, with shortage of beds, medical supplies, and water, often forcing them to push back needed surgery. This is the main hospital in this region. There are 150 beds here, but the medical facility currently has around 250 patients. Almost half of them arrived in the previous days. Fighting in the Afar region intensified in January, with Tigrayan rebels launching attacks against this part of the country, full of mineral resources. Civilians here complain about lack of government support now that the TPLF has brought the war to some towns in their region. Vinicius Assis for VOA News, Semera, Ethiopia.
In East Africa, an influential regional trade bloc is embarking on an ambitious program to help refugees and communities hosting them. The Intergovernmental Authority on Development, which includes eight nations in the Horn, Nile Valley, and the Great Lakes region, will train teachers in its member states in psychological support, information and communication technology, and life skills. The effort seeks to ensure that teachers help refugees and their hosts boost their chances to attain quality education and compete for job opportunities. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
The training of the teachers essentially implements the Djibouti Declaration on Refugee Education, which was adopted in 2017 by ministers of the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD. The objective is to enhance refugee self-reliance through access to quality education. However, a needs assessment undertaken last year among the eight IGAD member states identified a need to improve the capacity of teachers among the refugees and host communities. IGAD member states include Djibouti, Eritrea, Ethiopia, Kenya, Somalia, South Sudan, Sudan, and Uganda. The training targets 1,000 teachers in member states. So far, 300 have completed training in Uganda, Sudan, and Ethiopia. Lucy Daxbacha is the head of the IGAD mission in Uganda.
We shall, in the next season, be training 300 more in the same three pilot countries. And there is a commitment by IGAD with its member states to continue this training. As you know, we are host to over 4.4 million refugees in IGAD region, and these refugees reside in host communities, and therefore we have millions of teachers to train. And it's very important that this training is a process of improvement of the skills of teachers, of knowledge, and above all, the quickening through ICT of their teaching and also the learning experience of students.
Uganda's Minister of State for Education, Joyce Moriku Kaduchu, says the government is concerned about the emotional, psychological, and social challenges learners have gone through over the last 2 years of school closure. She says the situation is worse for refugees and host communities who could not access online learning during the lockdown as teachers struggled with limited ICT skills. Kaduchu notes that the training is timely and says she is hopeful it will equip teachers with the appropriate learner-centered skills to support the emotional and psychosocial needs of displaced communities.
The teachers that have been identified, they were identified in the refugees, secondary schools, as well as in host community secondary schools. And the whole rationale behind that is to improve the quality of education. If we have to improve the quality of education, we have to improve the quality of teaching.
Uganda is currently the biggest refugee host country in Africa, with about 1.5 million refugees from Democratic Republic of Congo, South Sudan, Burundi, Rwanda, Sudan, Ethiopia, Somalia, and Eritrea. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
Hello, this is James Barton, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
This is the Voice of America in Washington, and coming up in the second half of the program, the Saturday Music Spot from our collection of music from across the continent. But first, a World Health Organization, UN Children's Fund study finds aggressive marketing practices by formula milk companies undermine women's confidence, discouraging them from breastfeeding their babies. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Some 8,500 parents and pregnant women and 300 health workers in cities across eight countries were surveyed over a three-year period. The report reveals six of the world's leading manufacturers of baby formula products engaged in systematic and unethical marketing strategies. All are in breach of international standards on infant feeding practices. World Health Organization scientist and a lead author of the report, Nigel Rollins, says more than half of parents and pregnant women report being bombarded with messages about the benefits of formula milk. He tells VOA industry claims are largely misleading and of dubious scientific veracity.
There are many examples of how, for example, they see scientific terms being used, where there are scientific claims in terms of packaging, claims that it will improve brain development, that it will improve growth, that it will improve immunity, even during the time of COVID.
Rollins says there is no evidence to substantiate those assertions. He notes new parents may have difficulty judging the truthfulness of marketing claims. He says they want the best for their babies and are vulnerable to messages that promise solutions to day-to-day problems. The survey was conducted in Bangladesh, China, Mexico, Morocco, Nigeria, South Africa, Britain, and Vietnam. In those countries, between 49% and 98% of women surveyed expressed a strong desire to breastfeed their babies exclusively. However, the report says misleading marketing messages reinforce the difficulties of nursing, undermining women's confidence in their ability to breastfeed successfully. The WHO UNICEF study notes global breastfeeding rates have increased very little in the past two decades. During the same period, sales of formula milk have more than doubled. Rollins says the health consequences for infants and babies who are not fed with mother's milk are serious, especially in low-income countries.
But in fact, breastfeeding has the protective effect against mortality, even in high-income settings. But the impact on lifelong health, so if you think about things like child obesity and child development and maternal health, risk of cancer, those are true for both children and mothers in every setting.
The report says the baby feeding industry uses promotional gifts, commissions from sales, and other inducements to entice health workers in all countries to persuade new mothers to buy their products. The baby formula industry did not respond in advance of the report, which mentions no company by name. VOA will seek comment from the industry as soon as possible. The WHO, UNICEF, and partners are calling on governments to adopt legislation to end exploitative marketing practices. They add these laws must be enforced to ensure that the $55 billion industry abides by the landmark 1981 International Code of Marketing of Breast Milk Substitutes. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The inspiration for Africa's Great Green War project to plant trees across the continent to hold back the Sahara Desert came partly from Burkina Faso. While the project faces challenges and criticism, it still has champions who are teaching the next generation the importance of planting trees. Henry Wilkins reports from Burkina Faso.
In the arid savanna of Burkina Faso's countryside, for decades, local people have understood the importance of planting trees to protect their livelihoods and hold back the encroaching desert. Few more so than El Hadji Salafu Wadrago, who has run a business planting and nurturing the famous baobab trees for more than 40 years. He says at first he started producing mango trees, but quickly realized lots of people were already doing that. So having a baobab at home and having noticed that people came to the house all the time to ask for the baobab leaves for food, he thought to himself, why not produce it in large numbers, deciding it would be a big help to people. The baobab tree's fruits, leaves and bark are used by some Burkinabe people as an important food source and for medicinal purposes. Thomas Sankara, the country's president from 1983 to 1987 and a national hero for many in Burkina Faso, envisioned planting the baobab and all kinds of trees across the continent. He once said, step by step, tree by tree, we will create this great park of 10 million trees. Some say Sankara was the inspiration for the UN and World Bank-funded Great Green Wall, a projected 8,000-kilometre-long band of trees stretching from the southern edge of the Sahara Desert. Backers say the project will help fight the effects of climate change, drought, famine, conflict and migration. But critics like Giorgio Vasciano, an associate professor at the University of Milan, say after 15 years, the project is only 4% complete, with just 10 years left before its completion deadline.
I can see three different kinds of problems. One from the social point of view, obviously from the implementation point of view, and then the ecological consequences and feasibility. Territory that is going to be planted with trees is currently a conflict area, either with traditional military conflicts or with terrorism.
Backers of the project, like Remy Hemerick of SOS Sahel, say it is making gains and uniting communities.
So we have been working on the ground, mostly with rural communities, rehabilitating land and forest, also empowering local communities to get involved into the economic system. So we really believe that the Great Green Wall is one of the solutions for the Sahel region.
Rodrigo's son, who is taking on the family business, believes tree planting is essential for the future too.
Donc je l'accompagne sur toutes les terrains qui est possible.
He says he accompanies his father everywhere, who shows him how to take care of the trees, and particularly the baobabs, which are a symbol of Africa, he adds. He also said it's important to save nature because, in his words, saving nature is saving the life of man. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Southwest Burkina Faso.
Nigeria's President Muhammad Buhari has signed an election law that activists hope will improve transparency and promote inclusion. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
President Muhammad Buhari signed the 2022 Electoral Amendment Bill in his village Friday with cabinet members and lawmakers in attendance. During the signing, the president said the bill contained, quote, salient and praiseworthy provisions that could positively revolutionize elections in Nigeria through the introduction of new technological innovations, end quote. The signing followed a campaign by electoral reform activists urging the president to approve the bill, which lawmakers passed in January. Activists applauded the president's signing of the bill. God Bless Otubere is the founder of Ready to Lead Africa, one of the civic groups that supports the new law.
A lot of people told us we were joking. This is Nigeria. Nobody's going to give you good electoral reforms. But we sustained the campaign. And today, the president of Nigeria signed the Electoral Reforms Bill into law 2022. And with pride, we are beaming. We are excited. It is not a perfect legislation, but it's an incredible improvement on what we currently have.
Notable innovations in the law include electronic transmission of election results, electronic voter accreditation, and greater accommodations for people with disabilities. The president said the law will improve the efficiency, clarity, and transparency of Nigeria's elections and address disputes often arising from dissatisfied candidates and political parties. Ibrahim Farouk is a program manager of the Youth Initiative for Advocacy, Growth and Advancement. He is encouraged by the new law.
In the run-up to the 2023 general elections, we're going to continue these engagements and find ways that we can actually turn up our democracy so that citizens can enjoy the dividends of our democracy.
Lawmakers had passed similar bills five times in the past, but the president refused to sign them, saying they needed more work. Now, as Nigeria heads to the polls in 1 year, many will be watching to see how and if the new bill changes the status quo. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
And now it's time for our Saturday Music Spot. Yes, time to relax and enjoy great African music.
Fine girls, be a what she say. On your champagne, na you'll go with me. Man, catch up, crime and primitive. Yeah, le party. And then, you drive. I'm in the yard, I'm in the temp. Only for them, you do that thing in a move. Yes, in the yard, I'm in the demo. Be a lady, you do fast, I'm in the move. I'm in the yard, I'm in the temp. Party, party after party. Yes, in the yard, I'm in the demo.
Your life because problem me not the finish. Leave me make I chop life. I no speaker for English. Brother, I no lazy. I work hard for this life. So I go chop on like party your love. Party your love. Eh. Me and me mademoiselle. Yeah. Like Obama and Michelle. Yeah. We go they do very well. Yeah. We go they chop on me well. Champagne is just for the pain. Yeah. I'm about to make it train. And I'm skin pain. I wanna do this again. As you can see, everything fair, fair, fair. Don't be lying, sweetie, sweetie. Yeah, fair, 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 fair. I tell you, oh, yeah, baby, oh. Oh, la, mu, je, je, je. Kofi, kinata, patu, rankin, and sisi, ne, de.
I'm in Mayala, and I'm in Mdem. Only for them, we do that thing, and I'm home. I'm in Mayala, and I'm in Mdem. Enjoy my life for me. Baby, come and shake body. My party money or no money. But me give me you wanna know body. Go come enjoy my life for me. Baby, come and shake body. My party money or no money. And if they, mama mean Diviana.
I'll catch up.
What's that to ya? Mama mean Diviana. Usher free Jimo. No, so mama mo no mana. Ah, so na jele you. I'm in the Alana Medentem. 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 We move, we move. You would have that one, my one, I would do. My one shake. You would have that one, my one, I would do. My one shake.
Nabakaza vitana vivazikirite Kalikubuni ya changa mkwano tumire no mwambi wangoli kwenja gala vitekebe. Hello, is the boy ya gala kwa gala tali kuyombera. Hello, is the boy ya gala kwa gala tali kuranira. Sagala kolumia, shechimu sagala konumia. Gambo, massage, aquata.
chokora emumatinga kuno yakowo kunyezira naitande omusajja chitenga day by day dobala babe kana kana le kanawe tubanga tanaraba agamba nkoye va mu meeting atema the private meeting no uli no mutwenga gukwetolola mwana wa mama semela chita kobala vuyange kula meeting manyira wagenze mu cheating kunira omulala replacing tuvuganye mu love competing bwemba kwetaga nebyoitana byombyetaga naye tebuli wobinyema orofunira omangu shoti kasi rana mura songa ya mwami wange no love kazanyo busanyo siyomba na mchala mundange beba tulimbe
Azizi wangu we, nikaimbia polisi na nikaimba soma soma soma.
Oh,
That was our Saturday Music Spot. Hope you enjoyed the music. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline Africa team, I thank you for joining us tonight. And please join us again tomorrow, Sunday. I'm Douglas Impuga.